You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Good day, Colorado, and thank you for joining us for the June 11th reading of The Environment, a collection of articles from the Nature Conservancy magazine, the magazine of the Sierra Club, and Mother Earth News. My name is John. Today, I plan to share the following main articles from the magazine of the Sierra Club. Fish populations were declining in Alabama. This Boy Scout did something about it. We also share from the Nature Conservancy magazine, new markets join the tuna transparency pledge. And time permitting, we'll jump over to Mother Earth News and share 10 garden watering hacks and tips for your vegetable garden. So we'll get this ball rolling here with the article from the magazine of the Sierra Club. Fish populations were declining in Alabama. This Boy Scout did something about it. A disappointing fishing trip inspired him to start the Eagle Reef Project, written by John Shell. "There were no fish here," one of the Boy Scouts in our group said, looking disappointed. I glanced out at the water. He was right. We were in Orange Beach, Alabama, for a January campout. 9 scouts from Troop 147 and their parents had come here because it was supposed to be good for fishing. I was 16 at the time and was one of the oldest kids in the group. In the end, all the equipment we had bought, all the research we had done looking for places to fish, none of it panned out. I was lucky enough to grow up with a dad who knew where great fishing spots were, and I am grateful every day for those experiences. But for these kids and their parents, the best spots no longer held the amount of fish they used to. I wanted to do something about it. So I did. In April 2022, I founded the Eagle Reef Project, hoping to increase fish populations so that everyone can enjoy the water like I did as a kid. It started with research, lots of research. I learned that oysters were dying off in the area because of predators and overfishing. Oyster beds help create habitats for fish to grow, so fewer oysters means fewer fish. Then, I learned about a biologist who made artificial oyster reefs and used them to clean up canals and rivers in Florida. The floating reefs sit under docks and give oysters a place to grow, along with barnacles. Each reef can act as a nursery for up to 200 baby fish and 300 baby crabs per year. I'd found it, a solution to help boost fish populations in our area. Why don't we have this in Alabama? I wondered. I did the math. I would need $30,000 to buy about 100 floating reefs and then a team of volunteers to install them across the Alabama coastline. It would be hard, but I knew I could pull it off. I organized a group of friends and others to help. Together, we launched theeaglereef.com so people could find out more about our project, donate money to support it, and learn how to put the reefs under their own docks. We raised enough money to buy a bunch of reefs, and we started installing them along the coast. A group of us helped place the first two under the Dauphin Island Sea Labs dock that June. To my surprise, the mayor of Dauphin Island came to watch. I felt important. I shook the hand of a mayor, and he was excited to see me. Word spread fast. More and more people donated money and volunteered to put reefs under their docks. News outlets covered the project. By the end of my sophomore year, we'd raised more than $50,000 and about 175 reefs were floating across coastal Alabama and Florida. People with influence supported the project, and multiple nonprofits and big companies donated. I did not expect this level of excitement from almost everyone in the community. Kids and their families helped build the reefs, including my high school friend Claire Powers. The project inspired me and others to change our outlook on how we can make a difference, especially in our own backyards, she said. After I graduated and went to college, I handed off the Eagle Reef Project to Partners for Environmental Progress, an organization that helps protect the Gulf Coast and the University of South Alabama's School of Marine and Environmental Sciences. On October 25, 2023, kids, parents, local business people, elected officials, and other supporters came to a ceremony to celebrate the project's success. If I can raise $52,000 and put out more than 175 reefs as a sophomore in high school, imagine what you can do, I told them. Because, after all, we had inspired hundreds of people to step up and do something special. We had inspired people to act. I felt the room light up at the notion that a group of teenagers with a small budget could help change the world. I also challenged them to keep going and try to get to 1,000 reefs. To this day, the Eagle Reef team is working to make that vision a reality. Find out how you can support the Eagle Reef Project at TheEagleReef.com. Once again, The Eagle Reef, all one word, no caps, all lowercase, TheEagleReef.com. Our next article today is from the Nature Conservancy. New markets join the Tuna Transparency Pledge. New signatories, including Carrefour, Aramark, Culimer USA, Loose America Foods, Pacific Island Tuna, and the Association of Large Freezer Tuna Vessels. Since its launch in April 2024, the Tuna Transparency Pledge has grown significantly to include major retailers, suppliers, and food service companies across North America and Europe, as well as other key global tuna industry actors. The latest signatories of the Tuna Transparency Pledge include Carrefour, Aramark, Culimer USA, Loose America Foods, Pacific Island Tuna, and the Association of Large Freezer Tuna Vessels. Together, the signatories of the Tuna Transparency Pledge represent some of the largest retailers, suppliers, and food service companies in the world. Led by international NGO, the Nature Conservancy, TNC, the Tuna Transparency Pledge is a global initiative aimed at addressing unsustainable and illegal fishing practices at sea. Through the Tuna Transparency Pledge, signatories aspire to advance 100% on-the-water monitoring across all industrial tuna fishing vessels within their supply chains or jurisdictions by 2027, taking a bold yet achievable step in transforming the health and sustainability of our oceans. The latest signatories join forces with the pledge's initial signatories, Walmart, Albertsons Companies, Thai Union, and the governments of Belize and Federated States of Micronesia. Without transparency at sea, illegally and unsustainably caught fish will continue entering the supply chain undetected, said Ben Gilmore, large-scale fisheries director for the Nature Conservancy. On-the-water monitoring is ready to scale today and helps ensure that the seafood on our plates has been harvested in compliance with fishery laws and social standards. We applaud the new signatories of the Tuna Transparency Pledge for helping to build this critical market momentum to support ocean wildlife protection and a lasting seafood supply. Industrial fishing occurs on more than half of the ocean's surface, more than three times the area covered by land-based agriculture. 3 billion people worldwide rely on seafood as a significant source of protein. As demand for these products increases to meet the needs of nearly 10 billion people over the next 30 years, so too does the pressure placed on critical marine ecosystems and the species that depend on them. Already, 90% of global fisheries have reached their maximum sustainable levels. Tuna ranks as one of the most prized and popular fish in the world, with 5 million tons of fish produced annually and a dockside value of $10 billion. One of the biggest obstacles to sustainably managing global tuna fisheries, protecting ocean wildlife, and delivering tuna products that inspire consumer confidence is the lack of on-the-water monitoring and data. Often, fisheries authorities and supply chain actors do not have the data needed to ensure that the vessels they source from are complying with fishing regulations and social standards. Having eyes on the water allows seafood suppliers and retailers to have confidence that the tuna in their supply chain has been sourced legally and sustainably. Electronic monitoring, the use of onboard video cameras, GPS, and sensors to monitor and verify fishing activities, and human observers can strengthen transparency and provide critical data needed for the sustainable management of tuna and other ocean species. In addition, on-the-water monitoring helps create a level playing field for the many law-abiding fishers around the globe. Electronic monitoring presents an incredible opportunity to scale observer coverage and increase data collection and monitoring on board tuna vessels, said Catherine Novak, Biodiversity and Nature Director of the Sustainable Fisheries Partnership. Longline tuna fisheries, in particular, interact with some of the most vulnerable species of marine wildlife, yet have the lowest levels of observer coverage and monitoring. Companies taking the pledge and working with their supply chains to increase monitoring can help reduce bycatch of seabirds and sharks and ensure compliance with regulations, social and labor safeguards, and corporate requirements and standards. Many technological advances have enabled fishery managers to better understand what is happening at sea, but without independent monitoring on vessels to verify catch activity, it is difficult to identify when illegal, unreported, and unregulated activity is occurring within the first mile of the supply chain. Companies that are unable to verify compliance with environmental and social standards risk losing business, in addition to increasing operational and business risks throughout the supply chain. Through the Tuna Transparency Pledge, the Nature Conservancy aims to unite key players across the seafood supply chain, including companies and governments, to help accelerate the adoption of on-the-water monitoring. The Global Tuna Alliance has made a clear commitment to transparency and best practices in industrial tuna fisheries, said Daniel Sudeby, Executive Director of the Global Tuna Alliance. Earlier this month, we launched our first five-year strategy, which outlines the outcomes for our partners committed to ensuring observer coverage reflects best practice. For example, 100% observer coverage. Our partners recognize that this level of transparency is essential to safeguarding our oceans and ensuring responsible supply chains. We are proud of those first-mover partners who have already signed the Tuna Transparency Pledge, and we look forward to working with more as they commit to this vital initiative. We urge industry leaders worldwide to take action and demonstrate their dedication to a sustainable, traceable tuna industry. The Tuna Transparency Pledge was developed by the Nature Conservancy in consultancy with other leading NGOs, retailers, and seafood experts. The Nature Conservancy works in collaboration with signatories and their NGO partners to track progress and support their rollout and verification procedures. Retailers, seafood suppliers, and governments can get involved in this initiative by signing onto the Tuna Transparency Pledge and demonstrating leadership towards the industry future of 100% on-the-water monitoring on all industrial tuna fishing vessels. Major retailers, food service, and hospitality sectors, together with tuna suppliers, processors, and distributors, can use their purchasing power to drive innovation and transparency in their supply chain so that consumers can confidently buy tuna products that were harvested sustainably and legally. By advocating for the adoption of robust on-the-water monitoring through the Tuna Transparency Pledge, industry leaders can help guarantee a long-term and sustainable seafood supply for the market. The Nature Conservancy is seeking signatories from other major seafood buyers, seafood supply chain companies, and governments to help drive industry-wide transformation. Those interested in building this positive industry change should email tunapledge@tnc.org. Once again, those interested in building this positive industry change should email tunapledge@tnc.org. Our next article comes to us from the Mother Earth News. It's titled, 10 Garden Watering Hacks and Tips for Your Vegetable Garden. Getting smart with how you water your garden will save a lot of time and money. Written by Benedict Van Heems. The article opens up with a picture of a gloved hand and a hose and a sprayer just watering down some, looks like some lettuce plants in mulch and surrounded by hay. The article starts, "Get savvy with these watering hacks to save time and money and improve plant health. Read on to discover 10 tips to help you save water in the vegetable garden. Number 1. Water selectively. Only water if your plants really need it. Dig a small hole with a trowel or just poke your finger in to check for soil moisture at root level. Number 2. Time your watering. Watering early in the morning to give crops time to absorb the moisture before it evaporates in the heat of the day. This also allows any water that gets on the foliage time to dry off before nightfall, helping to minimize problems with slugs and fungal diseases. Watering heavily now and then will encourage a more extensive root system than watering little and often. Number 3. Take careful aim. When watering by hand, aim at the base of the plants where it's needed. This will also keep foliage dry. 4. Trap water. Sink plastic pots or upturned bottles with the cap removed and the bottom cut off up to the rim next to thirsty plants, such as squash. Water into the pot. The water will reach the roots instead of running off the soil surface. 5. Irrigate efficiently. Automatic drip irrigation or leaky hoses are less wasteful than sprinklers. Override the timer if there has been rain or if rain is due. 6. Choose pots carefully. Clay pots, such as terracotta pots, wick moisture out of the potting soil because they are porous, and metal pots heat up very quickly, which speeds up evaporation. Choose plastic or glazed pots instead. You can disguise ugly pots with a more decorative metal or terracotta outer pot if you wish. Group pots together to cast shade at root level and slow evaporation. Number 7. Add organic matter. Soils rich in organic matter absorb and retain moisture better. Add thin layers in summer so you can fork it in and replant. Then add thicker layers over winter. Number 8. Mulch regularly. Landscape fabrics can be used as mulch, or pebbles and stones on pots, but the best mulches are of well-rotted organic matter, such as compost. Apply 2-inch thick layers of organic mulch to moist soil. Keep mulches topped up throughout summer. Number 9. Collect rainwater. Collect water off your roof, greenhouse, and shed into water barrels close to where you'll most need the water. Multiple barrels can be linked together for greater water storage capacity. Check local rules on rainwater harvesting first. Number 10. Remove weeds. Weeds compete with your plants for soil moisture. Hoe off annual weeds and leave them on the soil surface, but make sure to dig out the roots of more pernicious perennials. And finally, we'll fill the rest of the time with an article from the Magazine of the Sierra Club. Are any of us really ready for fire season? It's never too late to get prepared. Written by Ben Jealous. The article opens up with a rather frightening photograph of a fire burning along a tree line and the sky just filled with clouds and plumes of smoke and orange glow. And the article begins, "The smoke has already arrived. This past week, thick plumes from wildfires in Manitoba and Saskatchewan have drifted into the U.S., triggering air quality alerts across the Midwest. Cities like Milwaukee, Madison, and Chicago are experiencing hazy skies and dangerous air conditions, with the air quality index reaching levels unhealthy for sensitive groups. Fire has always helped shape our forests, especially in the West. But those forests have evolved around natural frequencies and intensities of fire. What we are seeing now is new. This early season smoke is a stark reminder that fire season is no longer confined to the West or wild areas, and more intense and longer-lasting fire seasons are the new normal." Megan Paxman says she lives in a state of constant anxiety every wildfire season. A mother to a son with asthma in Alberta, Canada, she wrote on the Canadian Broadcast Corporation's website about her experience on Mother's Day 2023. My 4-year-old son had been sleepy and unwilling to eat all morning. I noticed that the skin between his ribs and at the base of his throat is pulling in between every inhale. When Paxman called the local General Health Information Service, a nurse told her, "Get him to the hospital now." The second I get a whiff of that telltale smell, I go into super watchful mode, Paxman says. I'm obsessively checking the local air quality levels and his breathing while watching for haze on the horizon or an orange tint to the light. That haze and orange tint are becoming more familiar for Americans from California to the Great Lakes to the East Coast. As of May 30th, the U.S. had recorded over 27,700 wildfires this year, 33% more than the 10-year average for this time of year. The devastating fires in Southern California this past January reminded us that the areas threatened directly by wildfires are increasing, with major cities no longer safe. The conditions that gave rise to those fires, including the Palisades and Eaton fires, which destroyed more than 18,000 structures and claimed at least 30 lives, were exacerbated by climate change. That's how it is around the world as well, where the global area considered fire-prone is projected to grow by 29% by the end of the century. Aside from fires' destructive impacts, the health impacts of wildfire smoke are profound. Fine particulate matter from these fires can penetrate deep into the lungs, leading to respiratory issues, heart problems, and other serious health concerns. Children, the elderly, and individuals with pre-existing conditions are particularly vulnerable. In some areas affected by the recent Canadian wildfires, residents have been advised to stay indoors and limit outdoor activities. Rising temperatures, prolonged droughts, high winds, and certain extreme weather events create the perfect conditions for wildfires to ignite and spread rapidly. But despite the growing risks, recent decisions by the Trump administration have undermined our ability to respond effectively. Staff and budget cuts to key agencies responsible for forest management and wildfire prevention threaten to leave us even more vulnerable and less prepared. Additionally, harmful legislation like the Fix Our Forests Act threatens to weaken environmental protections and prioritize logging over sustainable forest management that could actually help address forest fires. We need a comprehensive approach to address this crisis. This includes investing in forest restoration, supporting fire-resistant and fire-resilient infrastructure, and implementing policies that drastically reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Public education campaigns can also play a crucial role in promoting fire safety and preparedness. There is no safe level of exposure to wildfire smoke. It is 10 times more toxic to our health than standard air pollution from the burning of fossil fuels, and there is no safe level of exposure. Do a quick search online about the impact of wildfire smoke, and you'll see countless articles from public health experts, pediatricians, and other doctors about ways to avoid PM2.5 exposure and the signs that indicate you should seek medical care. But isn't it a better solution to address the actual cause of more, bigger, stronger wildfires and the deadly pollution they bring? To make it so the air is not so toxic that kids with asthma essentially have to shelter in place deep in their homes during the very months they should be playing outside? Communities across the country must come together to demand action. We must hold our leaders accountable and push for policies that prioritize public health and environmental sustainability. The challenges are immense, but with collective effort and determination, we can build a more resilient future. In the meantime, preparedness is key. Stay informed about local air quality conditions and have an evacuation plan in place. But let's not forget to support initiatives aimed at eliminating fossil fuels and mitigating the impacts of climate change. Our health, our homes, and our planet depend on it. We'll finish up with a quick post from the magazine of the Sierra Club. To the young and young at heart, with love. Seedlings is Sierra's first ever issue for young readers, written by Jessica Meskis. Years ago, before I became a parent, I had an idea for a special issue of Sierra dedicated to young readers. The idea came and went. It resurfaced after I had kids of my own and discovered a new way of seeing the world through their eyes. I wanted to share that perspective with our readers. That vision has finally come to life in Seedlings. I hope that this special issue is just as inspiring and fun for a 9-year-old as it is for someone who is 90. Because joy matters to every one of us. Keeping that joy for the world and for one another alive in our hearts matters. It's why we care so deeply about protecting the planet. It reminds us that even the smallest change, when made with love and care, can have a big impact. The next generation of changemakers, adventurers, and caretakers is already here. You are that generation. So, our call to you is this: dream big, take action, and never stop believing in your power to heal, protect, and preserve the world we all share. And that's all the time we have today. Thank you once again for joining us for the June 11th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.